A lot of people wonder, how do you know if this is the right time to get married or if this is the right person to marry? Alistair Begg says figuring that out was simple for him.
I got married to Susan because I couldn't imagine living my life without her. I wanted her to be my friend in life. I wanted to become her dearest friend. I wanted to become one with her. I didn't want to write letters to her anymore. I couldn't handle it any longer. I want to be married.
This is Family Life Today. Our hosts are Dave and Ann Wilson. I'm Bob Lapine. You can find us online at familylifetoday.com. We'll hear today how a teenage boy from Scotland and a teenage girl from Michigan met, fell in love, and we'll hear the shocking story of the first time Alistair Begg kissed his wife-to-be. Stay with us. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us. There is something that you and I and our friend Alistair Begg, something we all have in common. You know what it is?
We like the Cleveland Browns.
Of course, that's what you would say.
Yeah, I like the Cleveland Browns okay. I mean, they're not on my
Alistair's a pastor in Cleveland.
He's
probably
right.
Been in the dog pound, you know, yelling at the Detroit Lions. I don't know.
Here is what I was thinking of. Alistair and you and I have all quoted pop songs from the 60s and the 70s pretty regularly in our preaching.
I didn't know Alistair did that.
I didn't know that either.
Oh, man.
Really?
He's pulling out Beatle lyrics and Simon Garfunkel lyrics.
Really?
And, oh, yeah.
This is one of the reasons you love him, Bob.
It is one of the reasons.
In fact, love him now, too. That's awesome.
I was at an event, and we're bringing all of this up because we're going to share with our listeners today a portion of a conversation I had with Alistair Begg recently. Alistair is a pastor in suburban Cleveland. He's the voice that many of our listeners hear on the radio program Truth for Life, a wonderful Bible teacher, but we were together, and I was doing one of my patented Name That Tune game shows, right?
And you're good at that.
Nobody can beat you.
Right.
I loved doing this, and I picked out some categories that I knew Alistair would do well on, and the final Jeopardy category was songs of Paul Simon, and I knew he would nail that, but the other contestant won that category instead of Alistair. He was so mad that
really?
They got his category. Anyway, I've had the opportunity over the last 10 years to introduce his daily program, Be the Voice at the Beginning and the End of Truth for Life. And I've had to make sure that I call that program Truth for Life and give the phone number for that program instead of Family Life Today. And we sat down recently, and I just asked him about his marriage, about how he met his wife, Susan. There's actually an overlap with Campus Crusade for Christ, which we're a part of. And it's a remarkable story. And as our listeners will hear, I said, this is none of my business, but when was the first time you kissed Susan? And
that's a little personal there, Bob.
I was surprised by the answer. I think you'll be surprised by the answer, too. How did you wind up as a teenager in America in the summer? How did that happen?
Oh, my late father-in-law would say, because, you know, I am a tenacious Scot. that's the answer. I don't know how much of the story you want, but it was this American family. I'd never met an American family that I met when I was 16 in suburban London that introduced me to Americans who were in the UK with Campus Crusade for Christ. And it was one of the girls of that American family that I had set my affection on. And
Break that. So you meet her and you see her and you go, wow. And
Yeah. This simple stuff.
You're 16?
And she was 13.
13?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did that compute for you that you're 16 and she's 13?
No, I never gave any thought to it at all. I never imagined anything really beyond the fact that I sat down to lunch at this table invited to this American home. And around the table were various people, some friends and the people in the family, and across from me, a girl. And she had the lovely, lovely eyes. And I was just fascinated, captivated by this. And the next day, one of my friends and I went to Carnaby Street in London before we got the train to go back to Leeds. And I got a postcard at Carnaby Street, and I wrote to her. And I said, it was so wonderful to meet you, and ask your mother if it's okay if I write letters to you.
You were instantly smitten.
Yeah. Throughout my life, every so often I've had a dream that we never actually got married. And I wake up in the worst condition possible until I suddenly realize, no, it's a dream. It's a dream. We're here. No, that was what started. So we lived 300 miles apart from one another, and then one day, without checking, that guy for Chrysler, what did you call him, the famous one?
Iacocca.
Yeah, Iacocca.
Yeah.
Iacocca, without checking with me, took the American family back to America. And so I had then the problem that it wasn't there were 300 miles between us, there were 3,000 miles between us. So I was very sad, and there's more to that story. My friend was friendly with her sister. I called him on the phone. I said, did you hear that they're not coming back? He said, yes. I said, what are you going to do? He said, what do you mean, what are you going to do? I said, well, what are you going to do? I mean, they're not coming back. He said, well, that's it. He said, well, you know, it was nice. He said, you know, they live there. We live here. Let's move on. I said, no, I'm not doing that. He said, well, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to America. It was like, yeah, sure you are. Yeah, why don't you visit Mars on the way? And but I put the phone down in my hallway and I said, I will go to America. I'm not going to, this is not over. So I wrote letters for another year. And I inveigled away to get to Expo 72 with Campus Crusade, knowing that her folks had introduced me to Campus Crusade and discovering that they were going to go to Expo as well, taking this girl with them. And so after a gap of about 14 months, I then met up with her in the Adolphus Hotel, which is where I was staying with these Campus Crusade guys. And she came walking down the stairs. Now she's 16 years old. I haven't seen her in 14 months. And I suppose it could have been that she said, hey, hello, you know, and the summer happened. But no, I got through that summer. And then I said, you know, I'm going to write to you more. And more. And I mean, she was here, the boys were here, all the stuff was here, everything was here. All I had was a pen. No telephones, no faxes, no Twitters, no nothing. We had nothing at all. And so that's how I ended up there, and that's how I ended up back there in 75, because we just ran out of postage and decided to get married. But at that point, she was only 20.
You had crushes before her?
Oh, yeah, every time. Always.
But you knew this was different?
Yeah. Well, we found out after 7 years of writing letters it was different. I mean, the thing that made it different was it was like, at the beginning, it was just silly childhood stuff. And we have all of our letters.
Wow.
All of our letters, which we'll have to go and burn someday. But as it progresses, you suddenly realize this actually could happen. And this could happen. And so I said, you know, you've got to go about your life. You've got to go to your high school prom. You've got to do your thing. People take you here, take you there. And I'm going to proceed like that as well, because I'm not going to live as a monk and you're not going to live as a nun.
So you were dating other girls.
I said we had to, because it didn't make sense. It would be crazy. This is not the way other people might go at it. But I said, this is what I want to say to you. You are number one in my affections. If you get moved off the top spot, I will going to write you a letter, and I'm going to tell you that I met Mary Lou,
right.
and she's filled up the page so much that it's only right to
goodbye,
to let you know.
Sweet,
yeah.
Mary Lou,
yeah.
I'm so in
that's
love
right.
with you.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly right. Yeah. Was that The Seekers?
No, that was Ricky Nelson.
Was it?
Yeah.
The Seekers did a version of it,
okay.
I think. Yeah. But and so I said, and maybe we'll go at it in the same way. And what happened was that her parents then suddenly realized, although her dad was reluctant because, you know, I had long hair and other things, but But they realized...
What other thing?
Well, very skinny jeans, you know. But they realized that I was actually... That these letters that were coming from this Scottish boy were actually good for their daughter.
Hmm.
I don't mean that in any presumptuous way. But the influence that I was having, even from a distance, with the letters, were proving to be significant.
Because there was spiritual encouragement happening?
Yeah, exactly. Because I was encouraging her then to get involved. One of the guys who was in the Adolphus Hotel with me, by this time was married himself, and I was encouraging her to get involved with his wife, who was also a Campus Crusade girl, which was exactly what happened. And on my shelf over the road here, you know, I have her living Bible, which is all marked up as a result of the weekly visits with this girl. Well, I don't want to take credit for that, but I suppose if my influence had been a different one, then it wouldn't necessarily have supported that.
Mm. So at age, were you 17, 18 when you conquered America, when you came to...
No, I was 20.
You were 20.
I was 20, 72.
And you came with the idea that... I'm going to come and we're going to solidify this or just take it to the next level?
Well, actually, I said she was 16. She wasn't. She was 17 because I was 20. It was June of 72. No, I didn't know what it would be like. I didn't know what chance there was, you know. I had a dog's chance and no chance. But I certainly was even more resolved. You know, we spent that entire week together in Dallas. Then I flew to Los Angeles with my Campus Crusade buddies, and then I had previously brokered a deal whereby the family's visit to a cottage up on Lake Michigan would also include an invitation to me. And so I was then in that environment. So although we were never closer to one another than 300 miles during the whole 7 years, on the occasions that we were together, you were in an environment where you could really take a measure of the person. So when I joke about the way in which somebody treats their sister, or if for a girl, watch the way the guy treats his sister, watch the way he speaks to the mother, that kind of thing. She had an opportunity to view that at least up until she left for America, because her parents came to check out my setup.
Hmm.
When they realized this fellow was writing letters to their daughter, which was good on their part,
right?
And so they came essentially to vet us.
When you arrived, if I remember this right, on the shores of Lake Michigan, you began to see there were other fellows who had interest in Susan.
Yeah.
And this was not just a simple process of I just need to keep writing letters and this will all happen.
No, it definitely wasn't. But you know, what could I do about it? I actually mentioned it again last night. I said, you know, these guys had muscles in places that I don't have places, and you know, there are funny stories about it. But they tried to teach me how to water ski. They had no interest in whether I could ever get up. They just enjoyed the privilege of humiliating me. They were skiing. Those guys were all the guys that kick the ski and ski in their bare feet. They were dragging me like a dead dog through the water, and Sue was watching this. You know, so does she love me? You know, does she? I don't know if she can stand this bedraggled Scotsman being dragged through the water and still say, "Yeah, I think I'm going to stick with him for another 3 months." You know, then there's something there.
At what point did you say, we're done writing letters. It's time to solidify this.
Well, I was so foolish and naive about everything that I better told her that, you know, when I was 18.
Hmm.
You know, if we keep this thing going, you know, I'm going to marry you if you let me.
Yeah.
And so, I think in the winter of 73. The Christmas of 73, I came to America.
A year and a half after Expo.
Yes.
Okay.
I came to America, and I actually sat down with her dad, and I said, you know, this thing here, this is killing me, because I live and die for the letters from your daughter.
Hmm.
I'm not messing around. So I don't know how this is going to work out, but I want you to know that's how serious I am. And I want to know that you're okay with that. And if you're not okay with that, I want to know that too, because it was just devastating for me. And so I think that was in the winter of 73. She then came in the summer of 74. Of course, my mother had died in the November of 72. And we roamed around Scotland with my dad. Well, bless his heart, you know, he took us around. It must have been so hard for him.
This is none of my business. Your first kiss?
Sue.
Where, when, how?
In the back of a friend's car. Called James Scorer. Said, don't look through your rearview mirror here, James.
How long had you been writing letters at the point you kissed her for the first time?
I kissed her on that Sunday night.
When you met her that?
Yes. I kissed her in the back of the car before she got out. She didn't know what had happened to her.
That first day, she's 13, you've just had dinner with her and you
no,
said...
No, we went to church. It was very spiritual. She did not go to church in the evening because she wasn't old enough for the youth group. But like you say, it's none of your stinking business.
You're a rather roguish young man.
Tenacious Scott. Listen, there was something about the whole thing that was almost cosmic, you know. But it wasn't right. I mean, if I got some guy doing that with my daughters, you know.
Yeah.
My granddaughter is 10. But I always say to girls now, and I meet girls at church and everything, they come, their parents introduce me, this is so-and-so. And I say, how old are you? And she'll say, I'm 13. I say, watch out for Scottish boys. They don't know what that means, but that's it. Watch out for Scottish boys.
How did you propose?
No, I just said, we're running out of postage. Will you marry me?
Nothing fancy.
Nothing fancy. No, we went out to dinner. I bought a ring in like a department store. Hmm. And her sisters, you know, they felt sorry for her. Oh, look what's happened to Sue. Hmm. I mean, look, she married a guy who's going to be a pastor.
Yeah, let me ask.
We're going to have to send care packages to this girl. I mean, what? This is a terrible thing. What are we going to do?
She could have had no idea what she was signing on to as a pastor's wife.
Oh, no, she couldn't, especially not in Scotland in the 70s.
Yeah.
No, it was devastating for her. And looking back on it now, I mean, I could weep thinking of what it meant for her. I mean, we got on a Russian ship and came across the ocean. And although she had lived in England from the age of 13, it wasn't her home, and Scotland certainly wasn't her home.
Hmm.
And, you know, when we would come out of the Charlotte Chapel, where we were in Edinburgh, she would beg me for the car keys. Please give me the car keys. I want to be in the car. And the reason was because she's shy, mm-hmm. and she can't have... I'll be here, you know. And I'd be like, no, you can't have the car keys. And looking back on it now, that was really wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I should have actually just said, no, let's go together.
Yeah.
But I was, you know, I was...
I remember good. Having lunch with an elder from our church and saying, I have wondered if I'm called to pastoral ministry. And he said, I could see that. He said, have you ever asked if your wife is called? And I thought, that thought never dawned on me.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like, well, of course I should ask that question.
Right.
And
right.
She's got to be a part of this, because the pressure on a pastor's wife, you were clearly called.
Right.
She was signing up because she's in love with you.
Right.
And all of a sudden, it's like, is this my calling too? Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt about it. I mean, and poor Sue, you know, because when we went to the church on our own in 77, the expectations on the pastor's wife were the expectations on the pastor's wife. The pastor's wife is the chairman of the ladies' thing.
Women's ministry.
She leads the thing. She does the devotional and everything. Sue was Well, she's 20 when she's married. So now she's 22, maybe 23. And all these old, what seemed old then, Scottish ladies, they didn't know what it cost her. Mm-hmm. The meetings would be on Tuesday afternoons, I think, and she would be a wreck, you know, all the way up until 20 minutes before the meeting. She was actually very, very good at what she did. She didn't believe it. She didn't want it. Right. And it was no, you know, she wasn't about to sing solos or play the piano for them. But she was fine because God brings good friends into that environment. And there were a couple of ladies there who became, you know, more than big sisters to her. And that was her salvation. So,
did she ever have a season early in the marriage where she thought, "What have I done?"
Oh, probably. No. You know, we were united in the thing. You know, we look back on it now. You know, here we are in one of the most visited cities of Western Europe, and we never did anything. You know, we had no money. And I wanted to please Derek Prime so much that, you know, if he said go visit 10 people, I would visit 20 people, and we didn't suffer from it. But she was gone from her mom, her dad, her siblings, everything that really represented security in her life, and she was hanging it all on companionship with me. But she knew that that was going to happen only. Well, our wedding was set for the 16th of August. The encounter with Balchin took place in maybe April.
So this was just months before the wedding.
Yeah. And so she didn't, her father didn't know if I was employable. he didn't know if I could support his daughter. And I didn't know either. I mean, in the providence of God, Kirby told me, Gilbert told me, there is not a man in the entire United Kingdom to whom I could send you who will be of greater benefit and help to you than the man you're going to. He said, you don't know that because you don't know him, but you will know that. Now, how did I get that opportunity? Mm-hmm. How did I get that opportunity? That is, you know, this is the Lord's doing. It's marvelous in our eyes. And the church, you know, welcomed us, and the American lady, the American, they liked the American lady. Mm-hmm. And that's what they would call her. We've got an American lady as our pastor's wife. She's American. So she lived as that. She lived as the American lady. We come back here. It was easy for her because they're all American ladies.
That's right.
Now we've got the Scottish man.
The financial change, because she had grown up in a...
Yeah, pretty nice setup. Yeah.
And now she's living at the associate pastor's wages in Edinburgh.
She's good. She's very, very good. She used to make things. You know, the 70s are the era of all strange stuff, you know. But she can sew. She can do stuff. So she would make these things. And then we would drive around and sell them in stores. Mm. And she would go in and she'd come out and say, I sold 10 of them. Oh, God, that's really good. That's really good. She's not a lazy person. She decided she was going to work as a helper in basically a senior citizen's home. And she would get up in the morning, she'd go away and feed porridge to old men who couldn't find their teeth and stuff like that. She would make a go of it. She's got far more of a spirit of adventure than myself. And, you know, she would never be stuck. I mean, I would be stuck.
Yeah.
She wouldn't be stuck.
Did you think or did she think you would live in Scotland your whole lives?
It never, ever occurred to us to think of anything other because, you know, by the time we were 2 years into it, I still had a miscarriage in Edinburgh. Then our son was born. So all the formative elements of her life in sort of grown up and married life were all now formed in the Scottish framework. She was very contented. She was very happy. My sisters loved her from the age of 13. I mean, they met her when she was, I think, 14. And to this day, they're the best of friends. Everything was good. It wasn't a quid pro quo, you know, maybe if I do X years here, you'll come and do X years there. No. But when the invitation came from America, then, as I say, it was a relatively easy thing for her to come back into an environment that was not strange to her.
And was part of your calculation that she had sacrificed to be with you and so now to come to America?
Not in any sense. Okay. No. She never asked that question. She never posed that. Hmm. No. The real question was, what do I do with this invitation, which I first declined and which came again a year later? And, you know, I came here as a very reluctant prophet. I had been in America enough by this time. I mean, I came in 72. Now we're talking 11 years later. So I had been north, south, east, and west in America. I'd been in Vermont. I'd been in New England. I'd been down in the southern states. And I knew that if you wanted to go somewhere in America, you're not going to go to Cleveland, Ohio. Yeah. Not if you're sort of choosing. Yeah. So it didn't hold any appeal in that way. The challenges that were represented in it were fairly daunting. I came out of a genuine sense of oughtness. That's the honest truth. I mean, I came willingly, but I came fearfully. And the fact that, 37 years later, we're talking about it is an indication of the forbearance of the congregation, of the tolerance of the lay leadership, who I surely must have driven them nuts I'd still probably drive them nuts, but I must have really done a number on them in the early days. And again, that's an indication of the grace of God, you know, softening those things and creating affection even in the rough-edged elements of interpersonal relationships.
When I think about motivations for marriage, some people say, I want to get married because it's better to marry than burn.
Mm-hmm.
Some people say, I want to get married because companionship, a cord of three strands. Some people get married because they read, oh, magnify the Lord with me and let us exalt his name together.
Yeah.
What was your motivation when you got married? if you could calibrate, I mean, all of that's in there. But I guess I'm thinking back to my own marriage.
Right.
I got married because I liked being around this person who loved me. I liked being loved.
Right.
I didn't have noble views of marriage. We will get married and we'll serve the Lord together. I was just thinking, this just feels good to be with this person. I've grown from there, but that's where I started.
Yeah. I got married to Susan because I couldn't imagine living my life without her.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted her to be my friend. I wanted her to be my friend in life. It's Abigail Adams, you know. I wanted to become her dearest friend in all of its dimensions, in terms of physical relationship with one another and everything. Yeah. I wanted to become one with her. I didn't want to write letters to her anymore. I couldn't handle it any longer. I want to be married.
So if you're sitting down with a 16-year-old young man today,
what? This is a different day. That's the first thing. No, this is a different day. I mean, the level of... Yeah. Anyway, finish your question. Sorry I interrupted you.
No, you're on the same track.
I'm anticipating it, yeah.
It's a different day. What counsel do you give young men and young women about thinking rightly about marriage in this day?
Well, one of the things I say, and you know, they say, well, you say this, but what about the safety valve for me in this whole thing, like you kiss this girl in the car before she leaves. But I was 300 miles away. That would have been a real problem if I lived three doors up from her or something. Or I mean, it was just so bizarre, right? It was shouldn't have happened. It should have happened. Who knows?
You're writing letters. As
writing
opposed
letters.
To
no, there's no.
Yeah,
we don't hang out. There's no way to develop that except these crazy letters. What I would say to somebody, one of the things I say to them is always, never assume that a friendship has to be more than a friendship when it begins, especially in our sexualized environment. where the phenomenal, ridiculous pressure and notions that are attached to all of this, the terms of engagement, Christian young people are going to have to be prepared to set boundaries for themselves that are regarded as absolutely ridiculous by their surrounding culture. It's one of the ways in which the teenager can actually prove that we are a peculiar people.
Yes.
And so, you know, I want to encourage them and help them in that regard. And also because, as I think we probably can acknowledge, many of the marital difficulties that we deal with in pastoral ministry, I find myself when they walk out the door saying, I don't think they've ever been friends. Mm-hmm. I don't think they've ever been friends. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was that their friendship dissipated. I don't think they started as friends. And especially if you add a physical dimension to the relationship on the front end that may actually become a driver for things. So that's one of the things. Enjoy developing friendships without putting the added pressure on the thing in male-female relationships. Mm. Look to role models that can help you with this. Be honest with whoever it is in your sphere of influence, whether it's your youth pastor, whatever else it is. Realize that he knows exactly what's going through your head. He understands exactly the concerns and the passions and stuff. I don't know much beyond that, just as I think about it just now.
On our wedding invitation, we had 1 John 4:19. Mm-hmm. We love because he first loved us. Has there been a verse that's marked your marriage, anything that the two of you have come back to as kind of formative to what your relationship, how God has brought the two of you together?
Well, and the two shall become one. Mm. Our wedding rings engraved into hers was "and the two," and engraved into mine was "shall become one."
Well, that's a fun love story. We've been listening to Pastor Alistair Begg and a conversation I had with him recently, just sharing about how he met his wife, Susan, and about how they got married. I love hearing people's stories.
It's really
like that.
Sweet, actually. Yeah. I thought at the beginning of the program, when you said, you know what the three of us have in common, I thought you were going to say, we all went hard after the love of our lives. Because you did.
That's
all
true.
Of you did, yeah.
That's true. And all of us have tried to put Jesus at the center of what
exactly.
we're doing in marriage, which is ultimately what this is all about. It's not temperament or personality. In fact, even as Alistair was talking, I was thinking they could not have anticipated what God had for them. You guys couldn't have anticipated. Marianne and I could not have anticipated. So if you go in thinking, well, as long as everything stays stable, this marriage can work, it's not going to stay stable.
Exactly.
Right. You got to be ready for whatever comes, and your foundation has got to be in something more than just your circumstances. I hope our listeners will go online at familylifetoday.com and download the entire conversation with Alistair. I think we talked about an hour talking about his family, about growing up in Scotland, about his call to ministry, about his relationship with Susan. It's just a great conversation. The whole thing can be downloaded. You can listen to it as a podcast. Go to familylifetoday.com and the file is available there. Alistair has also written a new book about faith. It's called Brave by Faith, God-Sized Confidence in a Post-Christian World. And we're making that book available. It's in our Family Life Today Resource Center. You can go online at familylifetoday.com to order your copy of Alistair's new book, or call 1-800-FL-TODAY to get a copy. Again, the book is called Brave by Faith by Alistair Begg. Order online at familylifetoday.com or call 1-800-358-6329. That's 1-800-F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. One of the things that Alistair mentioned in our conversation was how his relationship with Susan really was solidified at an event that was hosted by Campus Crusade for Christ back in 1972 called Explo 72. David Robbins is here with us. David's the president of Family Life. And David, although we mention it every day here on Family Life Today, a lot of our listeners are surprised when they find out that Family Life is a part of CRU.
Yeah, well, what's also fun is that Meg and I met within CRU in a small group. There, we tried out co-ed small groups for a semester or two at the university we were at. And so all of a sudden, I'm like, man, I get Alistair and Susan's, you know, we got something in sync with them. I'm thinking that's pretty cool. I just love Alistair so much. And, you know, his heartbeat for the gospel to go forward, you know, some of those initial threads, you know, go back. One part of that story is with CRU, and that's certainly the case for Meg and I. I'm so grateful to be connected to a ministry that has the Great Commission centered in what we are about, of taking the gospel to people who haven't had the chance to hear it and helping make disciples who make disciples. And at Family Life, that's one of the main things we're about. You know our mission statement, many of you, to effectively develop godly marriages and families who change the world one home at a time. And we want to be about transforming marriages and families who therefore go and transform others, who participate with God in his kingdom being built. And we are about families, discipling families, and every single one of you who follow Jesus gets to play a part in God's kingdom building, and your family and your home is a key part of that.
And we are thankful for those of you who pray for us, for those of you who go and engage with your neighbors, your coworkers. We're also thankful for those of you who support this ministry financially and make Family Life Today possible. You've heard us talking about the matching gift opportunity that's available during the month of May. Thanks to those of you who have given already. If you're a regular Family Life Today listener and you see the benefit of how God is using this ministry in the lives of so many couples all around the world, just know that any donation you make today is going to be matched dollar for dollar up to a total of $350,000. That matching gift opportunity is good for us through the end of this month. So let me encourage you to make a donation today. Go to familylifetoday.com and donate online, or call 1-800-FL-TODAY to donate. When you do, we've got some thank you gifts we're going to send you. The information about all of that is available online when you donate, or you can ask about the thank you gifts when you call us. And we are grateful for your support of this ministry and for how God is using Family Life Today in so many people's lives all around the world. And we hope you have a great weekend. Hope you and your family are able to worship together in your local church this weekend. And I hope you can join us back on Monday when we're going to spend some time looking back at some of the things I've learned about marriage and family over the last 28 and a half years that I've been co-hosting Family Life Today. We're going to talk about the kind of stuff that I pass on to other people regularly in conversation. So I hope you can tune in as we spend some time taking a look back. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch. Got some extra help from Mark Ramey and our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our hosts, Dave and Ann Wilson, I'm Bob Lapine. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas, a CRU ministry. Help for today, hope for tomorrow.